GTK is going to start using it as a back end or something. But I thought, well, maybe that'll be cool. But first of all, that's not really to do with...
Denied! Even the phone lost interest in your question.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Lug Radio Season 22.
Season 22.
Let's remember this.
It's like Buck Rogers in the year 30,000 or whatever it is.
Lug Radio in episode... In, what is it?
Lug Radio, not Season 22. Episode 22 of Season 2. So yes, welcome to Lug Radio, the show that's been described as the Everest of podcasts.
By who?
About as often as Everest has been described as the Lug Radio of the Himalaya. What are we going to talk about today, Jeff?
Was that your gag that you
mountaineering or...?
That's bollocks.
It's quality gag. Yeah.
Did you get the Michael Jackson jokes link that I sent you? Oh, talking of jokes, tell your joke.
I'm not telling a joke. Okay. It's appalling. What are we talking about today?
It is appalling and possibly illegal and offensive at the same time.
It's certainly offensive.
Let's talk about Cairo. Which,
Cairo.
Cairo.
Yes.
Let's talk to Henrik Nilsson-Omma about
the open CD.
And the Software Day thing.
Software Freedom Day.
Yeah. And who else did we speak to?
That guy in America, Symphonios.
Symphonios, yeah,
Ryan Quinn from Symphonios.
From Symphonios.
Yeah, from Symphonios. So, let's not forget the Filthy Gamble.
Oh, of course, yes, we've got some more filth.
We need to talk about Hula.
What are we going to say about that? We're going to talk about the new features. Of course, Matt,
you're going to remember from our discussion earlier today about the...
Two weeks ago.
Whether you should develop something held back and then release it. So.
Oh, yeah, yeah, of course.
Do you remember?
Yeah.
Okay, guys.
We recorded that.
Sounds brilliant. Let's get on with it.
The OpenCD is a project to put Windows-based free software out into the public and to get people to become aware that you can get free open-source software.
It's very good. We use it at Open Advantage.
Do you?
We do indeed.
Does it work right?
It's very, very popular.
Cool.
And I know that people on the info points have been using it.
It's a nice way of introducing people to open source
Get them started on Windows.
And that project is run by a guy called Henrik Nilsson-Omma.
Yeah.
And it's also sponsored by our pals at Canonical.
Yeah.
And
inferring some kind of financial link between us and Canonical, which doesn't exist.
Well, no, there isn't one. But basically...
There might be one, though. Mr. Shuttleworth.
Mr. Shuttleworth.
Shut up, Jono.
Sorry.
But anyway, I'd like to now introduce you Henrik, who's going to talk to us not only about the OpenCD, but also about Software Freedom Day.
Excellent.
Hi, Henrik. It's the gents of Lug Radio here.
Hi, good evening. How are you doing?
Hi.
How are you?
Okay, thank you.
Good-o. Now, you're the bloke behind the OpenCD. Can you tell us basically why we want to have a CD that puts loads of Windows software out there?
That's
great
right.
Question,
so this is an idea I had about 3 years ago. This is when OpenOffice and Mozilla and so on were turning 1.0, and people were wondering why, you know, everyone wasn't switching to this great free software. And the focus was really on Linux, and everyone had this feeling that we had these great free operating systems, and why doesn't everyone just start using it? And I had this realization that it's just too big of a hurdle for many people to switch, you know, the complete OS straight away. So I thought this would be a good first step for lots of people to start using some of these applications and then gradually be able to migrate their data and so on. So that seems to have caught on, that idea, and we're now in version 3, and it's taken on life of its own. So that's
okay,
cool.
So you did the OpenCD, you first got the idea 3 years ago, you said, yeah?
Right, yeah.
Do you think that you've actually helped people make the migration to a truly free operating system, or people get as far as going, oh, free software for Windows, and then sticking with Windows?
Yeah, it's difficult to say. I don't think it's made people stay longer on Windows. I would refute that, I think. I mean, you have heard stories of people... starting with a few of our programs, Mozilla or OpenOffice, and then getting inspired. We've had a few computer stores distributing our CDs, and then people have come back the next week and asked for a full Linux machine. So
yeah,
that does happen. But it's a bit anecdotal, of course. We have no real statistics on this stuff.
Have you had any support from distributors and the actual people who make the software that goes on the OpenCD for the project?
Not so much support, but we've had collaborations with some of the marketing teams, like the OpenOffice marketing team and so on. And of course now we're working quite closely with Ubuntu and Canonical. So
what was that with Ubuntu?
They're sponsoring our project now, basically.
All right, cool.
Ubuntu are distributing some of Mozilla and things on their CDs, aren't they?
Yeah, so I'm basically the guy who's put together the Windows section for the Ubuntu CD. So all the Ubuntu live CDs from Warty and upwards have had a small section that not many people know about, really, that has about 100 megabytes of Windows software.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So that's OpenOffice and Firefox and a few things like that, which some people are using, I think. But, Linux diehards like ourselves don't really come across that section very often. So, but, yeah, when you put the CD in the Windows machine, running Windows, then, basically a stripped-down version of the OpenCD pops up and tells
you
about...
Excellent. That's cool.
Yeah.
Tell us about Software Freedom Day, by the way.
Yeah, so this was an idea that a guy named Matt Oquist had last year. He came into the OpenCD forums and said, hey, let's have some sort of celebration where we talk about free software and then, the benefits of that, and then give out some CDs and so on. And we thought, yeah, that's a really great idea. Let's do it big and let's do it global. And he wanted to distribute, obviously, the OpenCD with that. Thought that would be a good idea, and we thought so too. So
cool. So, I mean, in terms of the Software Freedom Day, I mean, is that for people to basically pull together and advocate software freedom, or is it to do things such as Install Fest and things like that?
Yeah, there are many ways of doing it. So it's basically driven by local teams around the world. And last year we had about 50 registered teams, and maybe about half of those actually staged active events. And there have been Install Fests. Some people have held seminars. Some people have just gone out in the park and given out CDs. Some people have, given speeches and so on. And
okay.
They really do it, locally the way they want to. And then this year we have a lot more teams, so it should be quite exciting.
All right. Just finally,
yeah.
Is it actually working? Is Software Freedom Day worthwhile, or is it just something that makes lots of free software fans feel better?
Well, I think even that is a good thing,
It's antagonistic.
To just celebrate ourselves a bit and enjoy what we're doing and get together on a day and just...
I think it's a great idea,
enjoy what we're doing. But no, I think it is reaching out. I think we need more pure outreach activities because, those of us who are already in the know appreciate, how valuable this stuff is, but lots of people have just never heard of it and really should get the word,
Cool. I mean,
that's the idea. Yeah.
As a final point, unfortunately, we're going to have to wrap it up. But there's been much discussion recently in the Linux press about the a British EFF. Is that going to hook in with something such as that? I mean,
we try to be quite broad and inclusive and invite whoever wants to participate, to chip in. So we're happy to collaborate with the EFF or the Free Software Foundation or any distros or any lugs around the world. So we'd like to just see whoever wants to be involved, really, do their thing. So.
Fantastic. And where do people find out more about this?
So that's on the softwarefreedomday.org site.
Okay.
And we have teams now all over the world. Africa seems to be very active in India and the US as well. So.
Cool.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. Sounds like everything that you're involved in is really inspiring. So.
Yeah, my pleasure.
And we'd like to encourage all the radio fans to go and take part.
Softwarefreedomday.org.
Brilliant.
Yep.
George.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Thanks very much, Henrik.
Okay, cheers, Henrik.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, a few episodes ago, we talked to the Hula guys, yeah?
And
we did.
We did. And
it's cooler with Hula.
It is cooler with Hula. And
it's cooler in here.
It's burly.
Take off your jacket.
No.
Yeah, just take your jacket off.
Moving on. Just because you're man.
Do you understand the layered clothing thing? Never mind. Johnny.
Incidentally, that looks like a stain on your shirt.
Golden. Tom, this is not good radio.
This is great radio. Anyway,
So we spoke to the Hoola guys, yeah? And yeah. One thing that they were saying is that they're developing the dynamic web interface for Hoola.
Yeah.
And they're developing it in-house. It sounds really, really good. They're developing it in-house, and then they're going to release it when it's in a usable state.
This is the thing that... So it's kind of like Gmail's...
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
and they're going to release it in a usable state, which seems perfectly reasonable, and then they're going to... People can then hack on it.
Okay. Release it
now,
when it's ready.
My question, and I don't... I'm just playing devil's advocate here. I don't necessarily believe this. I'm just saying, is that the right way to do it? Is
was
it
that a disclaimer or a disclaimer?
It was a disclaimer this time. Thanks, Aid. Is it right for them to do this? I mean, not just the Hoola guys. I don't want to pick on them. Is it right for anybody to
create
a chunk of code first and then put it on the net ready to
Let's first ask why they would do it.
I mean, it
seems... You wouldn't want to release if it's a load of shit, would you?
Yeah, it seems logical to get it into a workable state. But the point I'm making is that the whole point of the open source process is that it's a transparent process and it builds up patch by patch.
Do you remember Lug Radio Live and Unleashed?
I have a recollection.
Lug Radio Live and Unreleased.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. They asked you when you were going to open source your blog content system, and you said, well, not for a while, because I've got to make all the code presentable first.
Yes.
Is that the same thing?
Not really.
No,
because
okay.
Hoola is a general purpose piece of software. My website is a bespoke piece of software. It's written for me.
That's one word for it.
Yeah, okay.
For shite pieces of it. Now, I don't think that's the reason. I'm inclined to say, looking at open source projects in general, the successful ones have strong leadership.
Right.
And you've got an awful lot of projects on SourceForge, which are this project that made no releases, where people start off without any code, but with an idea, and spend so much time discussing the idea and working out what to do, they never actually get anywhere. If you give people something to work with, even if it's just a prototype, then you can start developing on that basis rather than spending all your time pissing around at the beginning, working out which direction to walk in.
Yeah.
And that's why I think holding on to the code, just, you know, you
want
to keep
state.
It as short as, you want to keep that period as short as possible, but keep it so that instead of saying, we're going to do a DHTML web interface to Hoola, you say, here is a DHTML web interface to Hoola. If you don't like it, fix it.
Right.
You know, and I think that's a much better
Which
way of doing it.
Which is not entirely dissimilar to what we talked about earlier.
Mind.
Well, this is not entirely different to what you talked about earlier about if you wanted to use Mono, or if you wanted to go to Novell and use and write a piece of software, they'd say use Mono, and then they basically say, well, go and write your own.
Are you saying that basically they should have released some stuff earlier
on? My personal view is that I think they've done it the right way. I think it's better to get something working and then possibly change it. And I'm just posing the question whether we think this is the whole release early and release often.
Yeah, we've talked in lots of previous shows.
We've talked in all of our shows.
About Mono and working with things that way. And yeah, I mean,
made some clicking noises.
I pretty much agree. Stuff designed by committee just doesn't fucking work. It really doesn't.
Because there's too much talking on fucking mailing lists
and
nothing and people
nothing ever happens.
And people writing specs and stuff, you know, and it never getting anywhere.
No,
I was
just about to offer the work I do as a total counterexample. If I go to people and say, okay, let's talk about a system that we need to build, and I spend all my time talking about it, or we spend all the time talking about it, nothing ever happens. You never come to any agreement on which way to go. What I do is I write a spec first, or develop a prototype, and then everyone can look at it, understand what it means, and then they've got something to point at and say, no, that's wrong, and this is why.
Yeah.
Rather than trying to develop.
Because Uncle Axe says it works this way, so therefore we must do it that way.
No, Uncle Axe says it works this way, so, and he's wrong, this is why, it should work this other way.
Yes.
But if you say to people, how should it work? It's much more difficult to invent a whole idea than it is.
Goes off on their own tangents,
than it is to piss on other people's ideas, basically.
Always the truth. Yeah. So let's move it on slightly, right? We've been talking for the last couple of episodes about
no, for all of them, mate.
For I'm getting there.
Right, okay.
For the purity involved in open source development. So, for example, earlier on you were saying about making sure that everything's available for everybody to use, as opposed to centralising frameworks and things.
Yeah,
we've talked quite a lot about that previously. And we've talked about bounties as well.
Previously on Lug Radio.
Now, do you think that this is in some way not pure, because this is kind of like, it's been developed initially to a usable state where people aren't probably going to re-engineer it out of that usable state that much by a small closed-off team.
I think it'll be a better product for it. It's a bit of a rubbish distinction, though, isn't it?
Come on, pure
or impure, I mean, the thing is, it'll come out and it'll be decent, and it'll be usable, and it'll work.
What happens if it's not, though? I've got every confidence.
And if it isn't, it's open, so fix it.
Yeah, but the point I'm making is that it's more difficult to take a piece of shit software and make it into a piece of good software, in many cases, than write a piece of good software from scratch.
Well, yeah, I mean, okay.
Now, what
like
I'm saying
operating
is,
system.
I've got absolute... this hooks in exactly what Aid was saying.
Yeah, no, it does hook in with what Aid's saying, and Aid was wrong about the operating system.
Oh,
and,
it was.
And
tremendously
you're,
wrong.
And you're yeah. wrong about engineering a whole new thing.
Let me
scratch.
Guess who's right.
What do you mean, me wrong? Yeah?
You saying it's much easier to write a whole new thing from scratch, which is good, than it is to re-engineer an old thing. You
yeah,
are
look,
wrong.
Let's look at who they're using Netmail.
Let's look at the Mozilla project completely abandoning the Netscape 4 source code and rewriting it all from scratch. Yeah, they've got a better product now, but in the interim, they had no decent browser for 7 years and they pissed away their 50% market share.
Which is what I'm saying. It basically...
So it gets you a better product at the expense of everything else want to do?
No, what I'm saying is that if it's more difficult to take this massive chunk of code and then make it work in a better way. In fact, you spend so much time trying to do it, and then you get to the point where you realise it can't be done, so you have to therefore write it from scratch.
No, you see, I think that's bollocks.
Why?
Because I think you can change it in bits.
That's if it's modularised. If it's not a modular code base...
They modularised X.org. They didn't write X.org from scratch. They took the X386 code and modularised it. And that's what you can do.
I'm not denying the fact that it can be done. I'm saying whether it's better or worse.
You two are very argumentative this
Why
episode.
Did... the X.org is a perfect example of this. They didn't just chuck away X386. They went, okay, we are going to move from X386 to a brilliant, fantastic windowing system that does everything we want to do in stages. They didn't just chuck it all the way and start again. Because it's not easier.
X.org is functionally not a great amount different to X386.
Completely agreed. You know, there are sort of 15 stages on the road to perfect windowing system, and we're at stage 2.
Yes, definitely.
Stage 1 was modularise the code. Stage 2 was write a compositing
manager. Where's Wobbly Windows?
Say. Yeah, Wobbly Windows is stage 2, if you like.
Yeah.
Or XGL. That's the point. But they had to modularise it first. But they could do that thing in stages rather than just go X386 is bollocks, chuck it away.
Yeah.
Write a whole new window.
But the question is, do you think the purists, I'm talking about the purists here, and I wouldn't say, maybe you're an exception, Ak, but I wouldn't say the rest of us are as purity focused.
You better say as pure. Then,
Puritarian or whatever it is.
Puritanical. I'd rather have a decent product released I'd rather wait for a decent product.
So long as it was free software in the end.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
Than have something released early that's pretty rubbish.
The thing I find interesting is, the impression I get from you, Ak, is that you think this is fine, yeah? You think that the way that the Hoola guy's doing it is alright.
Yeah, I think so.
The thing I find surprising from your perspective...
They wear grass skirts.
Is that you take a very purist perspective on a lot of things, and I'd have thought that you'd have been pissed off by this. Because if you look at it from a happy, slappy, purist kind of perspective, it does seem wrong. It seems wrong. Pragmatically, it seems it makes perfect sense. Pragmatically, I completely agree with them. Purity.
So what he's saying is that you are very rarely pragmatic.
Yeah.
But listen, isn't the reason for wanting access to the source code that you retain your freedom and that you can then make it better? So what freedom are you losing if the product isn't available and if...
You coughed up a lung.
Sorry, what freedom are you losing if the product's unavailable, but the source code's also unavailable? You know, you're not losing anything.
You're not losing anything, but...
So there's no reason to be not pragmatic about it, because you're not losing any freedom anyway, so you might as well...
You are, actually. If you're looking at it, again, from purist perspective, you're looking at the fact that in an open source project, everybody should have an equal share of the pie in terms of possibility of developing. By cordoning off part of the project and keeping it between two or three people is depriving the rest of the project from necessarily interacting with it.
I entirely understand Jono's point there. If the Hoola guys sit on the web interface until they've got a working prototype and they say, then they are denying the rest of the open source community the chance to get involved with that and shape the direction in which that prototype goes. Because something Jono said earlier is important, that if you've got that prototype, you're likely to change it quite a bit, but the basic ideas embedded in it will stay the same.
Yeah.
But then what's the fundamental question then? Two questions, I suppose. The main one is, what right do the open source community have?
What's what?
What right do the open source community have to demand some kind of involvement in a project that's that the original creators don't see as being ready yet?
If it's open source, everybody's got a right to be in a part of it.
Yes.
But the thing is, if they release too early, okay, and it's shit,
that's open source.
Grief,
that's the whole concept.
Yeah,
of open
I know, obviously. But
I think.
Now, hang on.
Oh, sorry, go on.
The thing is, if two or three people have got a very strong vision and they want to implement it, and then once it's implemented and they're happy with it, they decide, right, now we'll let other people in. What's wrong with that?
I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it. I mean, I
just being devil's advocate.
Yeah, I think the way they're doing it's absolutely bang on, pragmatic way.
Sure, yeah.
All I'm saying,
Dino Reeves.
All I'm saying is, I can understand if people, again, purists would see a problem in it. And I'm just curious as to, whether we really thought there was a problem with it. To me, the pragmatic nature of it outweighs the purity of it.
Yep.
Yeah, by far.
Can I just say something?
What Spock said.
Can I go back to the purity thing? You said that because it's open source, everyone in the community automatically has a right. But the other thing about the open source community is it's very much based on what you can offer.
Completely.
It's a meritocracy. So if people want this, they demand this right to have an involvement, then I think they've
Excuse
got
me.
To prove themselves. No.
What's a meritocracy?
Got it's a society that's based on how good you are.
Based on being good.
Not
oh,
on
like
just egalitarianism.
Right.
Like
Sorry.
Oh, when I say that, I mean in terms of people being good. I don't just mean Bob the Builder deciding that he wants to go and have any say. I'm on about people having a right to be good in that community. What I'm saying is that those people who are already in that community who are good at it, they're being deprived.
Is there a community already, though, if it hasn't been really... I mean, what community would it be?
The Hula community.
Right.
There's a community behind Hula.
Sure, yeah, okay.
I mean, it's driven...
And there's a community of DOM scripting and Ajax JavaScript developers.
Yeah.
Who could influence the project and don't get the option of doing so.
Okay.
But I think that they're right to hold on to it until you've got something for people to talk about.
Most definitely.
Yep.
A while back on Lug Radio, we talked about cut-down desktop environments.
We did indeed,
For people's dads and whatnot. Uh-huh, we decided they were a pretty good thing.
And possibly mums,
absolutely.
But they're not technical, right?
A guy called Ryan Quinn, in collaboration with a few other guys, has put together a thing called SymphonyOS.
Okay.
Which is a cut-down desktop environment, but it's different from other types of things. They're going in a different direction because they're trying to make the desktop focus on usability.
Yeah,
making it GNOME and KDE alike. You know, so they've taken the four corners of the screen over to do things like the trash is in one of them and the applications menu is in another and the shutdown menu is in another and so on.
And that's something to do with this Fitts Law thing.
To take advantage of Fitts Law. The point being that the four corners of the screen are the easiest to get to because you can throw the mouse as hard as you like in
a
direction.
I don't agree with that.
And then
part
the mouse ends
law,
up in the corner.
But anyway, it'd be interesting to talk to this guy.
But this is the point. It's not necessarily whether they've been successful, they're just they're prepared to innovate.
It's really interesting.
I think we should talk to them. Let's talk to Ryan
Quinn. Let's get him on the phone.
So, Ryan, tell us a bit about SymphonyOS.
Well, we started out the project about a year ago. I was really looking into trying to do something on the desktop, and with the skills I had, I'm not really a C programmer. I also wanted to see what we could do as far as, you know, working with the browser technology as far as integrating that into the desktop a lot more. And soon after I started it, Jason Spisak came along with these amazing drawings of what he wanted to do as far as a desktop system, and that's pretty much where it came from.
Cool. Is it the sort of thing that you'd want for your operating system, or do you have another target audience?
Well, it's a little bit of both. I mean, it is what I want for mine, but our main target audience is really unexperienced users, the nice thing about it is the way it's written. I mean, pretty much everything is in Perl or in scripted.
Okay.
So the more experienced users can actually jump in and change just about anything.
I didn't realize that.
Without having to recompile or anything like that.
It seems obviously the desktop is very, very usability driven. I mean, what kind of usability designers and engineers have inspired you to create SymphonyOS?
Well, most of the usability stuff was actually came from Jason and his experiences. He was formerly one of the founding members of Lycoris. I guess a lot of it is stuff that he really wanted to do when he was there, but didn't really fit into their whole scheme and the plan that they were working with there.
Something we've talked about on Lug Radio before is the idea of having a slightly cut down desktop for people who don't need the full functionality of something like GNOME or KD. I'm thinking of, you know, my dad, for example. And SymphonyOS seems to be really good in that kind of niche. Are you seeing it as being something like that, or are you expecting it to be as performant a desktop as GNOME or KDE?
I absolutely see it fitting in that niche. Although, I mean, if you're a, you know, if you want to get in, mess around and, you know, make a lot of changes, it's all there. Primarily, we're trying to slim it down. It's going to run the small footprint, and it's not going to have nearly as many configuration options, which, you know, some of us wouldn't like, but, you know, most people's parents probably would.
Right, and in terms of the, you say it's designed to be fairly simple.
Yes.
Do you feel that it can... Is it intended to scale to the kind of applications that you'd have in GNOME? We're not talking about configuration. I mean, do you think it could compete with GNOME in terms of being a fully featured desktop or only useful for three or four different applications?
Well, I personally already use it as a fully featured desktop. I mean, it's really best with a smaller suite of applications, but it does scale up pretty well.
I mean, it seems to me from having a brief look at Symphony OS, I mean, the project looks great because it's very innovative and it's pushing in a new direction, but it seems like a really great idea if you want to give, for example, your dad a web browser, an email client, and some of the bits and pieces. But for a full-featured desktop, it seems to be... it seems like it wouldn't scale. Am I wrong in thinking that?
It depends. I'm not sure I'm exactly following where you're going with that.
Right.
I really think
explain
yes,
yourself, Johnny.
A lot better with the, you know, the smaller number of applications for someone like a parent or grandparent who yep. doesn't have a lot of computer experience.
Right,
that's
right.
Definitely
yeah.
the market that we're, you know, that we're going towards. Whether or not it could be used in other areas, it all depends on what the user needs. I mean,
sure, yeah.
you don't need everything that's in GNOME or KDE, even in a corporate desktop or something like that.
I mean, that's the kind of thing I'm angling towards, is that it seems really, really great for the kind of situations where you really want to give a more restricted set of applications. But for somebody who would use all of the features in something such as GNOME or KDE, it seems like it would, to make Symphony OS into that project, would be kind of like bastardizing it into that project. Whereas
well,
it seems
you've got GNOME and KDE for that.
Well, yeah, you've got GNOME and KDE for that. It seems really suited towards that kind of limited, you know, a lesser application goal, really. It seems... Would you say that's fair?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Basically,
So you were saying that you're useful like a parent or something, and that's sort of the exact sort of goal I was thinking of, because my father's going to be getting a computer soon, and I was thinking of Symphony OS for it. So I've tried Symphony OS 0.3. What are the new features in 0.4 or Beta 4 or Alpha 4, whatever it is?
Alpha
4, isn't it? Yes.
Yeah, it's Alpha 4.
Yeah,
and,
what are the new features in
there? Oh, there's a ton. First of all, the Alpha 3 really was just barely even functional,
okay.
really. We left a lot of pieces we're still missing out of it. A lot of that's been added in.
Yeah.
The desktop's really fully functional. One of the things that we had in our programs menu on the system wasn't able to, you know, pull in anything from applications that were installed or anything else.
Okay, yeah.
In Alpha 4, we are able to fully read the free desktop files.
Oh, okay, cool.
And
cool.
able to integrate all those into the desktop.
That's excellent.
System.
I think we've only ever played with Alpha 3 here. So, when is Alpha 4
yeah.
out, by the way?
Well, as you're recording this, it's probably about a day or two away, so probably by the time
cool.
is out, it will be.
Excellent. Now, obviously, we've spoken about how it's quite innovative and everything like that. But where do you see Symphony OS long-term sitting in the operating system landscape? Because, you know, you've got macOS, which is for people who wear orange sunglasses. You've got Windows,
Rectangle.
Which is, at the moment, for the masses. And then we in the free software world are looking to... You know, put maybe say Red Hat and Suzy and Novell desktops on the corporate, and maybe something like Ubuntu on the general purpose desktop. Where do you see Symphony OS sitting?
Well, honestly, I see it as almost if it were to be, you know, marketed, I could see it almost as more like an appliance type deal where you buy
yeah.
you know a plain box that would be set up with
it looks
and
quite
it'd be
appliance-y, actually.
The computer that your grandparent can order and plug into their TV or. You know, into their monitor or whatever, and it's just, you know, plug-and-play basic system, low-end type of thing.
Right, so you're seeing it as kiosky almost. Basically.
Yeah, absolutely. I could definitely see it there. We also are, you know, even possibly in low-end corporate desktops, perhaps. You've got the receptionist or the secretary at the office
yeah.
who only uses an office suite and a browser and, you know, isn't extremely computer literate. it'd be a good match for that type of situation as well.
Right, okay, cool. A question then. I've been reading through Jason's 8 laws of how a desktop should work. Is it 8 or 9 laws?
8.
8 yeah. laws of how a desktop should work, which are fascinating. How far would you say you are down the track towards the desktop that you want SymphonyOS to be? Are you a reasonable portion of the way there, or are you 1% of the way there and there's still tons of innovation to go, or what?
Well, I would say we're probably somewhere around, you know, 10 to 20% of the way along. Right. There's a lot of stuff that, you know, Jason wants to do that we're still a ways off from fully implementing. And, I mean, we're trying to stick to that whole vision because it really does, you know, lay out what we want to do. But, yeah, I'd say 10 to 20% along. There's still a long ways to go, but we've gotten quite a bit in there already.
Brilliant. Well, thanks so much for coming on the show. I think we have... Do we have one more question?
No, that's fine.
No? Okay. Brilliant. Thank you so much for coming on. I mean, it's...
it's a great project.
It is a super project. Really exciting.
Fantastic project.
And just
okay,
one...
Thank you, guys.
One confession to make to you. Earlier on, I saw SymphonyOS for the first time, and Aid showed me it. And when it was booting up, I think it's fair to say I was pretty sceptical of it. And I was reasonably impressed with it. You know, it's I can see how you guys are moving forward with it, and it's very inspiring to see
Can't
innovation
wait to
going
see
on.
Alpha 4.
How can people get involved if they want to?
So, yeah, how can people get involved with the project before we go?
Basically, right now we're not as well organized as we'd like to be, but if anybody, you know, just join the forums. That's where everything centers around right now.
Okay, fantastic.
Cool.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much, and good luck with the project, and we'll hopefully hook up with you for another 5 minutes sometime in the future.
Yeah, thanks for talking to us.
Okay, thank you.
Cheers, then. Ryan. Bye-bye.
The gamble.
The gamble of filth.
We return with the filth.
We are here again to talk about a filthy gamble.
Now, I want to just warn anyone listening in America, you can only listen to this feature if you're in Nevada or Atlantic City.
Thank you, Matt.
That was nice and random.
So the gambling laws. You're not allowed to gamble in the United States of America.
Are you not allowed to gamble? I mean, I understand you're not allowed to gamble on poker or anything, but you're not gambling the privacy of your own home.
Privacy of your own filthy home.
Yeah. And are you allowed to gamble?
Your own filthy pants.
Are you allowed to gamble on filthy things? I mean, you can't gamble on
before, blackjack. We've had some suggestions in the wiki.
Before we talk about the suggestions, can I just give a round of applause to Miguel de Icaza
for being
a fantastic sport.
Yes, well done, Matt.
Thank you, Miguel.
Nice one.
He was a great sport. Yep. We actually spoke to him about whether he'd be all right just putting
it in
the show.
We thought we should run it past him first.
And he was cool about it. It's the first time we've ever felt uneasy about maybe publishing something.
I think it's the first time we ever thought Miguel was cool, which I thought was a bit mean. we think Miguel's cool. Thanks a lot, Miguel, because you were a very good sort about
it. Well, good sport. I've not
heard from Linus Torvalds.
About the kangaroo suit.
Yeah, but...
We just published and be damned.
Interesting how we thought we'd better get Miguel's permission, but, fuck a bunch of Linus Torvalds. Yeah.
But
he'll be all right with it anyway.
On and on about wearing his skin, so... you know.
Right. So, Filthy Gamble, what's going to be the first one?
I don't know. What have our lovely listeners put on the wiki?
Yeah. Well, we've had a variety
of
suggestions.
Let's go with the spam one.
The spammers one, I think. How much would you have to be paid, chaps, to work as a spammer?
This is a bloody
difficult
one.
Is this for 12 months or for good?
Is it to work for spammers?
Work for spammers, yes.
I don't know whether there's a distinction, other than the fact that...
Run a Windows box and you're working for them anyway,
well,
most of the time.
Exactly what I was going to say. If you've got a Windows box and it's connected to the internet, you're working for spammers.
I'm assuming it's actually...
And that's free.
I'm assuming it's actually filling in the mass bulking software to send out, you know, your free...
I'd do it for $500,000.
Wow. $500,000.
You'd hold out for $500,000 to write...
Fucking hell, they make it in, like, a day.
No. That's not the point. The point is, if someone came to you and said, I'll pay you £100,000 to write a web spider that scrapes email addresses off websites, you go, no, I don't need $100,000.
Yeah, I would.
Would you?
Because... It's spam is shit. It's just evil, but...
There are a couple of considerations to make here, aren't there? One is that there's loads of spam anyway. So whether you do it or not, someone else is going to do it.
There's loads of murder anyway, isn't there? So it doesn't really matter.
I haven't said that I would do it for £100,000 yet.
It's the two wrongs. Do they make a right? Yes, no, yes, they do.
You're the guys who say you'd do it for £100,000. I haven't said I'd do it at all. So the other thing is,
you go and work for Microsoft, wouldn't you?
You're a marketing person. What you do is spam.
Yeah.
My name is not Peter Cannon.
Right? Oh, harshness.
Cool. Come on, how much should you get for
I bet you anything he's going to ask us to take that out of the show after we finish recording this.
No, because Spam Cannon doesn't listen to this. Anyway, here's the thing, right?
Come on, Matthew, how much?
Harshness.
Right, harshness. Come on, Matt, how much would you work for spammers for?
I have to say, I really don't know. I mean, to me, spam is just one of the worst things that exists in the electronic world, apart from child porn and stuff. So I don't feel that
I'm only joking. That was a gag.
And for Nordle on the forums, KDE. So, yeah, I...
Nordle?
Yeah, he was the guy who asked us to stop bitching about KDE all the time.
All right.
And yeah, I said, I will when it's sorts being
shit. I was going to say, he posts on my website and he seems all right.
And he's... And
he's on my website.
You know, sure, he's fine.
He makes a very good point, and in response, I ought to say, KDE, he's wank, you know.
Back to the point. Cold, hard figures. Come on.
A question, before we go any further.
Cold, hard figures.
I knew you'd have a question.
Karen Carpenter.
Is there... Is there a distinction between different types of spam? I mean, would you, for instance...
Did you read one on the wiki?
For instance, would you spam
an old lady, a product you agreed with
for less money than you would spam Viagra?
The thing is, if you spam a product you're agreeing with, then you do more damage because you're harming the product you agree with.
And well, possibly so. You know, I mean, this is the point.
Guys, I need figures.
Does it matter
what
the
spam is? I've got a suitcase bulging with money. I need figures.
I think I'll probably do it. Actually, I'm going to raise it to 150 grand.
No, you're so principled.
I just don't...
Okay.
I've got this big dilemma, right, in that there's lots of spam There's lots of spam anyway. So if I did some, what difference would it make? But the thing is, I hate spam. I think
backpedal.
I think
the tragedy of the commons.
I haven't ever backpedaled on this.
You get squeaky when he gets angrier.
Refer to my earlier comment where I said, give me a fucking figure!
All right, a million.
Okay.
I wouldn't turn down a million.
I don't believe it for a fucking
minute. So you
wouldn't
do it for half a million?
Half a million?
If someone dangled half a million in your fucking
face. What exactly would I be doing? Just working for spammers is a bit, you know, up in the air.
Helping in the creation of spam and its
propagation. So if I was copywriting a spam, so, okay, put a D here.
Can you copyright a spam?
Yes, as in copyright, as in
being
a copywriter.
He writes web content.
It's very
important. What do you do? You sit on your ass playing with Ubuntu all day. So, I mean...
He's not wrong, is he? Let's be honest.
No, I play with my balls as well.
I think it's almost the same question as how much would you need to give up open source?
Yeah, shut up.
It would feel like a similar betrayal, so my answer is similar, which is £250,000.
I don't care about spam half as much as I care about open source.
No, but I don't think I could feel comfortable working with open source if... Shut up. I don't think I'd feel comfortable working with open source and backing it up and fighting for that cause if I was a spammer at the same time.
Exactly.
The two things are completely opposite.
Here's the thing.
Yeah,
it's like being
firm vegetarian apart from fish.
That's
a good point. Yeah.
Here's the thing to tie it up with. Spam is illegal in a lot of places now. So that does add another dimension.
Illegality doesn't even bother me.
Oh, it's the canned spam.
The murder of Miguel
Del Casa. Yeah, I'm sure the murder of Miguel's illegal as well.
Or anyone else.
I think it's a lot more illegal, to be honest.
Okay, next topic.
Let's talk about...
Hang on, bald man. You haven't given us a
figure. I did, 100 grand.
Half a million, actually.
Thank you. Yeah, that's right. I feel as you cheat.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, you're right in that.
Let's all talk at once.
So I was talking first.
And I'm the bald.
Anyway, let's move on.
Next topic.
One of the other discussions was, imagine the setting, right?
Just yeah.
Close your eyes.
It's going to be filthy,
isn't it? It's a candlelit evening in Florida. It's a nice warm evening.
They got rid of all the Americans.
The candles are out, a nice warm dinner, there's a big large bed. You're stood there with your smoking jacket on, fully rubbered up, ready to bang like the shithouse door. Who's laid on the bed? Bill Gates and Steve Jobs. You've got to basically provide rectal pleasure to both of those fuckers. Which one's it? How much is it going to be? Not my suggestion, by the way. This was on the wiki
as
well.
I'd do it for £2 million.
£2 million. One million each.
Yeah.
Well, which one would you love more, Aid?
Mr. Jobs.
Why?
Really?
Yeah.
give him some loving. Jobs gives him some bold pleasure.
Despite how much you hate Macintosh, you'd rather bum love Steve Jobs than Kat.
I'd rather anally intrude that man, yes.
Actually, it must be admitted that you bum love Microsoft every day anyway, so I suppose Jobs ought to get a turn.
That's front loving, though, not back
loving. I thought there were lots of back doors in Windows. Yeah, this is an odd question because I'm concerned that one day I might be Prime Minister and people might listen to that. No, seriously. What if my grandchildren
I'm concerned
hear
that my chin might explode right through that wall with the idea of you being Prime Minister.
Oh, double chin, triple chin record.
No, I was joking there, but seriously, what if my grandchildren listen to this and they hear me saying, yes, I'd have, you know, homosexual relations with...
You're not going to have any grandkids. You're a Jaffa, aren't you?
What's a Jaffa?
See, no priest.
Am I Cavalier or Roundhead? I can't even remember which is which. Anyway,
have a look now, Matt. Anyway, yeah. So,
come on, Matt, what's
you
the price?
Saying, so you were saying how you
can
you
I defer
feel ashamed?
This one until you guys have answered? Because
no.
I don't know.
I'm not clear. It makes a difference that it's Steve Jobs and Bill Gates.
It's still gay sex, basically, isn't it?
Yeah, you know. Which is not particularly my thing.
Do you have
but
to
if it were my thing, it wouldn't make any
million
difference.
Pounds.
Although, no. I'm not saying that I wouldn't do it, but the fact that it's Gates and Jobs is basically irrelevant. You know,
it does make a difference.
If I had to watch them have a hammer fight, then that might be all right.
It's the difference. No, it's the difference between having sex with Pamela Anderson.
You could be rough with
a Mo Mollum.
Mo Mellon's a nice person.
Yeah, but you wouldn't want to bang her, would you?
Depends if she was...
Matt's remaining very tight. Let's see
if you of Microsoft or not.
You love
all right, then. And with...
Come on, Ack. Put a fucking price on it.
A lot of respect for her.
Oh, no, a million
quid. She's got big knocks.
For the both?
Yeah.
Okay.
Matt's just told us that Anne Whittaker's got big tits.
But she mings.
imagine astonishment in the room.
Imagine you the fancy Tory advice. No, I don't. I don't.
You love the Whittaker.
That's like Boris Johnson fancying Margaret Thatcher. I never understood that.
Anne Whittaker, Matt Whittaker.
Jono. What's the price?
I don't think I could do it for any money, to be honest.
What?
It's just. I, honestly,
this is the man who's always going on about money.
You do it for 100,000.
Jono, I'm completely secure in my sexuality, Bacon.
No, I think. I'm probably
Are you scared that you might like it?
Actually, no, I think I'd probably do it for $1 million. I'd have a shower and then I'd have a shower and then I'd dive
with
into
your
massive bits of money.
Do you have to... I mean, let's get a little bit technical here. Do you have to actually, you know...
Oh, yeah, that's the whole point.
Do what? Go on, Matt.
You can't make gestures, it's a radio show.
As in, push the tunnel into the darkened...
Can we please not do
that? Yeah, I mean...
Go on, Matt.
Do you have to sodomise them all?
That's the idea.
Well, you're not just going to lay next to him and tell him whisper sweet nothings into his ear.
Haven't we already got your price?
No, not at all. No, I'm a married man. I wouldn't want to be unfaithful in any way.
Matt, this is a filthy gamble. It's not going to happen.
If you weren't married,
you were...
Oh, a million. I mean, I'm not going to turn down £1 million, am I?
What about half? I have. I've turned it down. I'm hanging out for two.
There's two of them.
You're hanging out for two, literally.
Two people.
Hanging out the smoking jacket.
The fruit is hanging out the loom.
Next filthy gamble.
Yes, next.
One of them was for us to basically record Lug Radio naked.
So I'd do that for £100.
No, record Lug Radio or record Lug Radio live?
I think it was Lug Radio.
Right.
And here's another important distinction. It said record/listen to Lug Radio naked. And I always listen to Lug Radio naked. He's trying to send it over on a Monday morning, and I'm sitting there in my dressing gown listening to it before I go to work. That is a mental image for you.
I don't know. You see, the thing about this kind of filthy gamble, it's not so filthy that it's ludicrous. It's the kind of thing you do for, like, comic relief or something.
100,000.
But how much would you want to literally have to be paid
100,000.
To basically see... our penises.
Do you think... Hang on. There's a big difference between us recording Lug Radio Naked and saying, we're recording Lug Radio Naked, and some bugger coming in with a camera and taking pictures and putting them on the fucking wiki.
All right. How much would you say anyone with a camera,
if...
You're on your honour.
Exactly. I mean, if...
Thing.
If, say, 5 or 10 or 15 listeners said, we'll donate £10 or £20 each, or we won't even donate it to Lug Radio, we'll donate
it
to... They
said a pledge bank is what you're suggesting.
To an open source charity.
Shut up.
I was emphatically not suggesting a pledge, man. But say 10 Lug Radio listeners or 20 Lug Radio listeners said, yeah, we'll donate
10 or 20 quid each to this particular open source cause if you record Lug Radio naked.
I'd do it if the money was coming to me.
I think we need a bigger room for my mighty weapon.
To be honest, it doesn't have to be armed.
I don't want to cross swords, that's it.
The one thing that...
Don't cross the streams. It would be bad.
The one thing that does concern me...
We have to put a minimum amount on this, by the way.
We're
do it for £2.50.
Oh, shit, we're not actually going to do it.
The thing that concerns me is that some fucker, and I'm thinking Bruno here at the moment, is going to go and edit that fucking wiki and say he wants to chuck in for this. This sounds like a challenge, and I really don't want it to be a challenge.
Well, there's a charity element involved.
I'd do it for charity.
I'd do it for my own charity.
If one of us got wood...
I don't think we have any problems in that area looking at you.
No, but there's been times, you know, like when you go to, I don't know if you had this when you were younger.
In a maths exam.
You're going to an exam or you go to the library or something, and then you just have a massive
storm. It wouldn't happen in this situation.
Here's the thing. We've recorded, 35 episodes of Lug Radio now? Not once during any of them have I got the bone on. Which means that you're implying that I get the bone on just by the fact of seeing you three naked.
Exactly,
which is
not going to happen.
It's the embarrassing situation. Here's the thing though. You're not allowed to comment on each other's manhood.
Even its magnificence.
I don't have any worries, Matt.
The Baltic, I'm hoping everyone's going to comment on my magnificent penis.
It is magnificent.
Anyway,
I have got a magnificent Trojan, I can assure you.
I'm impressed.
It's a phenomenal beast.
Next filthy gamble. Filthy gamble.
One more.
Another filthy gamble?
We were going to try and come up with something else as we came along.
We're not doing the War on the Worlds thing.
Yeah, let's do that one.
How much to kill the little actress in War of the Worlds?
I wouldn't kill her.
She's a little freaky actress.
Is she a midget? Or
no, she's just amazingly good and she's like 6 years old.
Don't you pick a 6-year-old and kill her? I'm not doing that.
I'm not going to kill a 6-year-old child.
Are you walking out of the woods on your own? Anyway, so the thing is...
I'm not even going to laugh.
I have a question. Baldman.
Yeah, I'm not going to do it, by the way. I wouldn't do it for any amount of money, just for record.
Since that chin is protruding from my face again.
Since I got the kick in last time, how much would you take to switch to MacOS?
How much would I take? For a length of time or for
permanently?
Good?
No more Linux or Windows for you. Mac on every machine you use.
Absolutely no amount of money.
Bullshit.
See, I wouldn't.
What total bullshit?
I wouldn't do it. Not for good.
Yeah.
I'd do it for 12 months or something, but I wouldn't do it for good.
You wouldn't take £100 million.
Don't forget,
but I'd never be able to use a decent computer again.
£100 million for computers.
And a Mac isn't a computer.
£100 million.
It's a shiny piece of shit.
But it runs Unix stuff. You can still install X on it and install.
That's not what you said. You said run Mac OS X.
But it is Mac OS X.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
It's still Mac OS X. The fact that it happens to run on X.
Too late, Aide. You've turned down £100 million.
That's fine. I don't want it.
You'd live in a gold house for that.
I don't want a gold house.
He hasn't got a telly. He's
a gold
like
yacht. You could wear a gold hat.
He hasn't got a telly or an ego.
A gold hat.
He'd be a lot short if he wore a gold hat every day. You wouldn't do it for any amount of money.
Thing is, if I had loads of money and all I could use was a Mac, I wouldn't be happy.
Sing it to the chin. I don't believe you.
Wasn't the one on there about how much to suck Jono's beard?
I can't really answer this one.
You do it for free.
I suck my beard occasionally.
Was it your face beard or your pant beard or your anal beard?
No, it's not my pant beard.
Your anal beard?
If it had been washed recently in Head and Shoulders, then... I'd do it for 50 quid.
Product placement, ladies and gentlemen.
You'd lick my beard for 50 quid.
Well, why not?
I'd lick it for 50 quid.
If it had recently been washed.
You got 50 quid.
With Pantene Pro-V.
You're 150 quid out so far this evening.
I don't mind people licking my beard as long as I get paid the money.
How much to lick Jono's beard if it's just been freshly shampooed?
50 quid.
There you go.
So
there's a chance.
I can make a cool 150.
No, we're the one who gets paid.
You could lose a cool one.
What about me? Oh, I've got to pay the 150.
Listen, you get licked.
Yeah.
Yeah,
by three of the handsomest Lug Radio presenters you know.
Well, okay, that's disgusting.
This feature's been ridiculous.
It is brilliant, isn't it? It's brilliant. So, next episode is our last one of this season.
Oh, yeah, contrary to
the
my reports.
Episode. Contrary to the fact that Matt made it up on the spot.
Matt got a bit premature there.
Well, I did.
Yeah, Lynn says all that all the time. Next episode is the final filthy gamble.
Is it?
Well, I'm assuming we're probably going to do one more.
We're not going to drag it out until October, are we?
So send in your filthy gambles. Update the wiki.
The wiki's very funny.
Thank you to the wiki guys, by the way. Good
Brilliant,
work.
As usual. Yeah. Yeah. And let's make the
Some
next one a real classic filthy gamble.
Yeah, come on. I mean, you haven't come up with anything that really
gets the
filth. Let's
push the envelope, guys.
It's moaning again.
Filth.
Moaning again.
It's moan.
Moan, moan, fucking moan.
He'd be moaning with Steve and Bill, wouldn't he?
One of the interesting technologies that's been talked a lot about in recent months is Cairo. And
it's been talked about by you a lot.
No, it's been talked about all over the all
place
over
in Egypt.
All over
my
all
house.
But yeah, Cairo is this interesting sort of 2D vector graphics thing that's been built, and it's going to be added to GTK in the next release of GNOME.
Okay.
And we are fairly mixed in views about Cairo, so let's talk to a guy about it. Let's talk to Carl Worth from the Cairo Project.
Bring it on.
Hi, Carl. You're on Lug Radio.
Hello.
Well, I'm glad to be here.
Hello. That's more like it.
We should hope so. So, okay, Carl, just for our listeners, give everyone a quick overview of what Cairo is.
Well, Cairo is a 2D graphics library. So it's something to help application authors write programs that draw things. And right. Mostly that's all it's good for is drawing pictures.
Oh, right. And what kind of, I mean, why should we care about this? A lot of people are hearing that Cairo's an important thing. Why is it relevant? Why is it going to become the next important thing with Linux?
Well, I don't know if it'll be the next important thing, but I'm having a lot of fun with it, and that's what I like about it.
Okay, cool.
But there's a few interesting things about it in terms of a drawing library. And one of the key things about it is an architectural aspect of it that it has multiple backends. It can draw both to the display, for example, using VueX server or even the Quartz or even a Win32 graphic system.
Oh, cool.
Also, it has backends that can draw to PDF or PostScript.
Ah,
so a big advantage of this is an application that's written to draw things with Cairo can get display and print output that match exactly with only having to draw only having to write the program
fantastic.
Once. So the same code can display to the screen and to the printer and get high fidelity matching results, which isn't the case with previous libraries where display and print results went through two separate code paths and you got mismatched results.
Okay, and that's an important benefit. I can see that, absolutely. The new version of GTK is going to be based on Cairo, by all accounts. Now, what you've just said about Cairo being good for having printer and screen pictures be the same is all well and good, but I'm not sure how that's relevant to, you know, buttons on a dialog box, which is what GTK is for.
Screen them.
So if you could tell us a bit more about that, that'd be great.
Yeah, that's an excellent question. The new version of GTK does depend on Cairo, and it is drawing all of its graphical elements with Cairo. But that doesn't mean a lot of change. As you pointed out, a button still looks like a button, even when it's drawn with Cairo. The big difference that this is going to make is that applications usually have, you know, menus at the top and buttons on the side, perhaps, but they have a main content area that's not drawn by GTK directly. The application does its own drawing there.
Right.
And now with this new version of GTK, applications will have the ability to take advantage of, very easily take advantage of Cairo for drawing their main content.
Ooh.
And some of the advantages that come from this, where previously they might have used GDK, the GTK's underlying graphics system. Advantages that Cairo provides over GDK are that all of the graphics are anti-aliased, so things look smoother and sharper, and you can easily do things like rotation and scaling very easily that
it's all built
you
in.
Just couldn't do with GDK. Both have sub-pixel precision when specifying where all of your graphics go. They can be specified more precisely than a pixel. Those are some of the things that come in future applications. I think that's the big benefit of GTK now, is not an immediate change, but opening the door for future work.
Right. I mean, it seems that a lot of people are getting excited about Cairo and things such as XGL because it's kind of providing the next generation of eye candy on Linux. Do you think Cairo can help us to achieve the kind of visual effectiveness that something such as Mac OS X is giving at the moment?
I think we can. We've been very careful to do, I think there's two things that we've been trying to do with Cairo. One is to provide an API that's extremely easy to use and actually a lot of fun to use. So for one thing, it's, and that's been a lot of the work over the last year, is making the API as good as we can so that it's easy for application authors to sit down and just start drawing right away. The second thing we've done is to architect things so that the back end of Cairo can take advantage of as much hardware acceleration as possible. Not all of the that's not all been hooked up as much as it will be eventually.
Yeah,
so not everything today goes as fast as it will be able to.
Mm-hmm.
But we have the architecture in place so that there shouldn't be any limits to what you can do with the hardware you have.
Okay.
So if things like XGL come along, Cairo will just go faster, and it should be an exciting time over the next couple of years.
Is
Cairo a more efficient way of drawing than something like GDK? Or am I suddenly going to have to chuckle my existing computers in a bin and buy brand new machines with 128 megs of video RAM just so I can get GNOME 2.12 to work?
No, one of the things we were very careful about as we coordinated with GDK on this new release is to make sure that GDK itself doesn't run any slower. So all of the old graphics should go through actually identical code paths, things that are drawing just straight rectangles and lines. When you do that with Cairo, you'll get a good result, the same result through the same code path, so just as fast as you would have gotten it with GDK.
You don't take any performance hit at all for moving to Cairo?
We've been trying to avoid that. We've been trying to make it run no slower. And to this point, for the tests we've seen, it's maybe a slight performance, you know, never more than 10 to 25% kind of thing. There's not like a big slowdown.
Is the idea with Cairo that we'll be able to use massively high definition screens in the medium term?
Well, that's going to depend a lot on the hardware manufacturers providing you with those screens. But definitely, scalability is one thing we're keeping in mind here. One of the problems that can happen with applications, if you've ever run an application that was designed for a screen with many fewer pixels than you have on the screen at the time,
yeah.
You know, everything shrinks and it becomes unreadable. The font sizes are too small, the icons are all too small.
Yeah.
And Cairo foresees that and makes it very easy to scale things up. A lot of modern applications, you can scale up the font size so that you can work around a lot of this problem.
Yes,
but things like the icons, the menus and toolbars will just shrink if the display resolution increases.
Yeah. Yeah.
With Cairo, everything is can be expressed as vectors, and as we start using those kinds of graphical elements more than bitmapped images, we should be able to plan for whatever future hardware will come down the line and be able to scale it up without any problem.
Another quick question. I mean, if obviously GTK 2.8 is going to depend on Cairo, and it's going to be using Cairo, if Trolltech decided to port Qt so it used Cairo, does that mean that we can have themes that will work on both GTK and Qt?
A bit speculative.
The first part of that, I would love to see Qt also agreeing on a common code base here, just so that we could get the community centered around one thing and not be working on two independent code bases that are solving a similar problem. As far as common themes, there's more to it than just adopting Cairo. There's this theme layer that will be built up inside GTK and inside of Qt to use it. But there is an interesting opportunity here in that the existing theme system in GTK, for example, is pretty much built around GDK. We can make the current theme system use Cairo, but you won't really be able to take advantage of some of the things Cairo lets you do.
Because it seems like a real opportunity to possibly make these things work together, because it seems like the KDE guys are sharing a reasonably avid interest in Cairo as well. Probably not to the same degree as GNOME due to the GTK port, but it seems like a really great opportunity to make some themes that will work across the board if they're using the same underlying architecture.
Yeah, I think it is a great opportunity, because what I think needs to happen for GTK now is that we actually need to invent a new theme system that will let the theme designers take advantage of some of the things that are available now. Alpha blending and anti-aliasing and scalability and rotation. These are things that Cairo allows that the current theme system just doesn't support. So if we have to, so given that we have to invent a new theme system, yeah, I think it would be great if there could be some way to do that together with Qt. But frankly, I don't know everything about what those theme interfaces look like and how big of a task that might be. But I would love to see it, certainly.
Right, okay. One of the things that you said there, you said a couple of times the new things that Cairo lets you do, like scaling and rotation and so on. I've seen people say, yes, you can do these things with Cairo, and then you've seen screenshots of the OK button with a little red ring around it, which is not all that exciting. You've got things like the wobbly windows and stuff like that, but I thought that was XGL rather than Cairo. So what will Cairo give you? In real terms, rather than sort of little tricky bits, what cool things are you expecting people to do?
So it is an interesting thing here that we're talking about with themes, and perhaps one of the things you're referring to there of a button with a ring around it. One of the really interesting ideas that we have is, for example, you have to think about how an existing theme works. The most artistic, well-drawn theme that really looks fancy consists of basically an artist drawing buttons to look in some interesting way.
Right.
And maybe they slice them up so that you can actually have wider buttons and narrower buttons, but pretty much every single button is going to look exactly the same because an artist drew it that way.
Mm.
What Cairo enables us to do is to draw as interesting a result, but programmatically, rather than going into a program such as the GIMP and actually drawing the artwork, we can write a program that creates the interesting effect. And what that gives us is a whole new flexibility to do dynamic and interesting things. For example, if you have a Cairo-based theme that's able to programmatically draw the interesting effect you're trying to create, you can also make that theme vary the artwork from one button to the next. So that when you have a screen full of 50 buttons, they don't all look like cookie-cutter versions of the same thing, but you can actually have some variation and changing between that.
Yeah,
so we've explored that a little bit on our own, and we've demonstrated that we can have dynamic themes, and so we've got one that has different rings around it, and the ring goes at a different angle and stuff. Obviously, I don't know how obvious it is, but we that did that work, we're not artists, so the actual effect isn't that impressive. But hopefully we've demonstrated this concept of dynamic themes, and we can get some real artists involved in making some good use of that.
That's a really cool
project. That's something where we'll probably need a new theme layer to support some of those things.
Right.
Well, I mean, I certainly feel that I have a better understanding of Cairo now, so thanks for that. But there's one thing that's still unanswered in my mind. The people who are working on Cairo, are they chiropractors?
Oh, for God's sake. I bet you've not heard that one.
Anyway, sorry about that. But thanks very much for giving us your time. And
I enjoyed it very much.
Brilliant. Thanks a lot, Carl.
Thanks very much.
Cheers. Just bye.
Bye.
Bye now.
I think this is a really exciting project. One of the things I think that Linux have done for quite a while is displaying text a lot better than Windows. So anti-aliased fonts, etc., etc.
Yeah.
Say so for the last 4 or 5 years.
Definitely. Yeah. Absolutely. No doubt about it.
Yeah.
In a web browser, for example.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, and if you look at what Vector Graphics has done for graphics in general, as opposed to bitmaps over the years, the fact that we can do this on the widget set is going to be brilliant. He mentioned that when you scale text up inside the browser, for instance, the menus and the buttons, they don't scale. And as Matthew said, on a large display, that makes a big difference.
It's going to be good for accessibility as well.
It's going to be fantastic for accessibility, yeah.
So, I mean, it seems good. The only person who seems unconvinced is
the person who thinks Mutt is better than
Fat
Thunderbird.
Boy Fat.
Yeah, you all talk shit, right?
Go on, then.
For a start...
Yeah,
The fonts in buttons are already rendered by FreeType, which can scale fonts all
the time. It's not just about the fonts.
Hang on.
It's not just about the fonts. It's about the styling of it.
So hang on. So you can't style a button, which is a box,
larger. Oh, yes, you can already. You can't start the fonts already bigger.
If the button is a box, it might be something else.
That's what buttons are.
But they might have
rounded edges. Want to have
but they haven't got rounded edges at the
buttons
moment.
Buttons are like that currently. What happens if you've got a button that doesn't have a consistent theme?
They weren't talking there, and people in general haven't talked with Cairo about... being able to re-theme everything and change themes. They're saying you can do things exactly like you're saying. It's good for accessibility, which is bullshit. Because all the accessibility benefits you can derive from Cairo, you can derive right now with our existing systems. What annoys me about it a bit
is that you're going to have to shell some money out for a decent machine.
No, not at all. I've got a graphics card which is quite capable of dealing with
right,
it.
Okay.
But they looked at it and they went, okay, we need a slightly more competent, a slightly more able graphics display back end or whatever.
Yeah.
So we'll chuck GDK in the bin. Fuck that shit. Redevelop it all from scratch.
Die.
Right? Why? Why did they take GDK and make it do more stuff?
What they've done is they've changed the available back end. So GDK is a separate thing to Cairo.
But why is it?
The GDK people haven't said, let's ditch GDK. What they're saying is that we are making Cairo available as a back end.
Why isn't Cairo GDK 2? Well, why didn't they build on the existing GDK rather than just starting again from scratch?
Sometimes you have to throw stuff away and start from scratch.
Why isn't
using what you've learned.
To Ford Anglia Mark II.
It is.
Three.
It's an incremental revision over the previous year.
It isn't.
The thing is that Cairo
is... You were talking about rewriting Linux from scratch there, really. Is my earlier argument that sometimes you have to. You can't keep building on old code. If you want to do something radical, you're going to have to start from scratch.
GDK was not intended as a vector system.
I agree.
It is a bitmap backend.
Why are vectors a good idea?
Because it allows you to, as he said, to have exactly the same graphics rendering system for whether it's for print, for screen,
so
for PDF.
So, why is that useful?
Because it cuts down on...
And why didn't we just implement...
Allow me to answer.
Sorry, go on.
I say, my opinion is because it allows you to cut down on redundancy in terms of what you got on the system.
And it's infinitely
scalable.
But also,
it allows you to have, like we were saying earlier, say for example, Next Lug Radio Live, right? Wouldn't it be brilliant if when we have a big projector screen that's enormous, that everything was... beautifully
crisp.
All the icons were beautifully
rendered.
Do you think that vectors have no advantage?
Yeah, that'd be absolutely brilliant if it wasn't for the fact that vector graphics won't help with that at all.
Well, they will, of course.
No, they
will.
Won't. Projecting a 640 by 480 pixel image
from
4 feet away will still be blurry, no matter whether it's generated with fucking vectors or.
So do you think there's no benefit to vectors?
If we had a 12 feet by 9 feet vector display, then yeah, that'd be brilliant, but no one's got any of them.
Yes.
What about type 1 fonts then? Do you prefer bitmaps?
No, I prefer free type fonts, which are already vector-based and scalable
without
Cairo.
Oh, so vectors are good, then.
But it's not just
fonts.
So
you're not saying vectors are bad?
No, what I'm saying is...
What about high-quality imaging?
What about high-quality imaging?
If you're doing any kind of high-end graphics...
Once again, why do I, as an ordinary GNOME user, have to give two shits about that?
Well, as an ordinary GNOME user, everything works fine.
Why do you have to resist it?
We can remain in the same position if we want to.
But
we can remain using Windows 3.1 for the rest of our lives.
What I find very
what's
interesting.
What's the point in saying, it's making a big stride forward, but I'm not clear that any of the reasons why people have given that it's a big stride forward, we couldn't have done... Anyway,
what I find
but
interesting,
but they're inventing one more bloody
whether
framework.
They do it with whether they do it with a GDK team or whether they do it with Cairo makes no difference. If you've got no objection to people moving forward, but your only grudge is the fact that it's with Cairo as opposed to GDK, I don't see that as a legitimate argument. Cairo is a free desktop based project. If it was GDK, the KD people won't hook into it. Other people won't hook into it. Whereas people are seriously considering Cairo.
So people are seriously considering Cairo just because it was developed from scratch. You think?
No. I'm saying people are considering it because it's a third-party, separate, desktop-agnostic framework. If it was GDK, that's hooked directly into GTK.
No, it's not. GTK is hooked directly into GDK.
But what I'm,
I agree with you.
The two are so...
But GTK will be hooked into Cairo in exactly the same way that it's hooked into GDK.
I'm not talking about at a technical level. I'm talking about a social level.
What do you do at the weekend, in a minute?
The fact is, you've got GDK, and GDK is so closely linked that... It's difficult to get other people from places like KDE to get excited about GDK, right? Yeah. Cairo offers a chance for a vector framework for everything. I don't see the problem with that.
What my problem with it is that it's one more framework we've decided to build from scratch. Every time Linux looks like
sometimes
it's getting close to doing something good, we chuck everything away and start again.
So why are you happy with UDEV then? if it's all about building things from scratch, that was built from scratch. HAL was built from scratch.
I would have loved... No, HAL's built on UDEV. That's the point.
HAL was built from scratch, wasn't it? HAL and UDEV were... They've basically...
No, HAL is built on an existing system. Yeah. Cairo isn't built on an existing system. The other thing which annoys me a bit is they said, look, we can do infinitely scalable stuff, but then again, so can XGL. You can infinitely scale a window with XGL. That's what the wobbly window stuff is about. That doesn't use Cairo at all.
Yeah, so that's at the X server level, though, isn't it?
So why don't we do it at the X server level and fuck a bunch of the widget set?
I don't know, but I'm assuming there's a reason why we're not.
In the past, I've talked about how Linux always seems to be playing catch up and not innovating, and this is just a terrific example of where
us doing something like Mac OS X.
No, that's not true.
Hmm.
Why isn't this true?
This is much bigger than that. This is Linux innovating. This is Linux being first to do something.
I am genuinely unbelieving that there is anything at all that Cairo will do that Display, PostScript, and Cocoa don't do and didn't do 5 years ago.
I think
that's the point. Yes.
Yeah, but it's not free, is it? We haven't got access to it.
No, and that's good, but it's not innovation.
Well, it is for the Linux world. It's an innovation over what's available on Windows, for example, which isn't necessarily a reason to do it, but the reason to do it is...
At the moment, yes. Until Avalon comes along. Windows Vista, it's called. No, it's yes. Fucking Swan Vista.
All of the operating systems that are basically heading forward and building their own version of the same thing.
Yes.
Right? And I don't see why we should say, oh, well, if it means doing something else from scratch, we shouldn't therefore do it. If we had that kind of fucking attitude, we wouldn't have got anywhere.
No, so we
if you had that attitude, you know, oh well, instead of you know, making a new video editor, you know, why don't we just modify the existing ones, even though the existing ones are shit? Instead of making a new desktop environment, why don't we, you know, we've praised the Symfony OS guys in this episode, and I don't see how that is radically different from.
By the way, I just need to point out that when I talked about building Linux from scratch, you all shot me down in flames.
Yeah.
That's exactly the point. But I said that, and I'm being consistent here. You said that chucking away Linux and starting again from scratch and doing it right this time was a shit idea.
No, what I said. What is the difference is that I think throwing away everything that we've already done and trying to do something completely different is ridiculous. But basing new ideas on where on things we've already experienced and then pushing that forward, I've got no objection to that. What Aid was saying in that episode was basically, let's completely start afresh and let's forget what we've done already, but really go and try something completely radically different. In that regard,
taking with us what we've learned.
If you mean I didn't get that from the conversation. If that's what you mean, then yes, I agree with you.
That's because you weren't listening to the conversation.
if that's what you mean, then yeah, I kind of agree with you. But not taking what we've already know, then that's ridiculous.
Bringing the conversation back to Cairo briefly, I'd just like to ask, what is it then?
It's gone now, mate. You can't ask.
Shut up.
Too late, man.
Aki is obviously passionately against the idea of doing this. So, can I ask then, let's just sum up, what will Cairo do for free software desktops? What will it do? It's so good.
What will it do?
Yeah, what
from
will Cairo
feature
do?
Feature
yeah.
level.
What will it, me, sitting down at my desktop in 2 years' time using Cairo, what will I get from it?
Higher quality graphics.
If you look what...
Right.
That's basically what it is. It's nothing more. It's nothing less. It's higher quality graphics.
To play devil's advocate for him, what... to play Ginger's advocate, why couldn't that have been done with GDK, a revised version of that?
Answer the question.
I can't think of a reason why. If that's all you're going to derive from it, higher quality graphics, I don't understand why we had to develop yet another framework to make it happen. Why we didn't just take the existing frameworks and make them better rather than chucking them in the bin.
I think that if you took the existing framework, I don't know about any of this from a developer standpoint. But
I appreciate we're waving our hands a lot in the air and we don't actually know. And the Cairo guys are going, the reason we didn't do it with GDK is because GDK is shite. Because it actually isn't possible. And if that's the case, then okay, I'll hold my hand up and say, maybe you did have to develop that from scratch because the old thing couldn't be revised. But I think a lot of people are all too ready to chuck away an existing thing which works but doesn't quite work right in order to start their own thing and stake their flag.
Let's not assume these guys are, though.
I was going
to
say...
You can't make a Ford Anglia do 200 miles an hour, mate. You can, but it's ludicrous to try.
I think at some point, if something's so radically different... Then it might make more sense to start a new project, and my impression again, not from a development standpoint, is that
and it's not just an empty framework. There is actually something being delivered here.
Yeah. Exactly. They've nearly finished it now, so let's be happy.
I think Cairo will be cool.
Just drag yourself into the 21st century.
And I think it's going to be great that people are focusing on stuff. Okay. So marvellous, really. I'd really like to see.
I can't wait to see
it take off. And yeah. I'm really looking forward to it.
So you say it's GNOME 2.12 we get this in?
Well, the next version of GTK, which is GTK 2.8, should be Cairo backed.
Right.
It is.
And the next version of GNOME should depend on the next version of GTK.
Okay.
So and therefore, GNOME 2.12 in October.
Woohoo!
Should be Cairo.
So basically, but it'll look no different.
Will that be in Breezy?
Which will be Breezy.
Nice one.
It's actually in Breezy.
Or for the Oracle 5, Matthew.
It's in Breezy.
Damn
now.
It. It's not all about the Ubuntu, you know.
But not in Slackware.
It's in Breezy now, but unfortunately X doesn't work in Breezy, so. Okay.
Good shit.
Which is a version of Ubuntu for anyone who doesn't know.
Well, it is the end of the show, and we've traditionally started to do emails at the end of the show, but to hell with that. We can't be bothered.
We're having a break.
Yeah, we're breaking new ground by not doing the emails anymore for today's show.
It's got nothing to do with the fact that none of us remembered to print the fuckers out.
I was busy.
Where were you today, Ak? What were you doing today, by the way?
I was looking after my daughter.
Is she all right?
Yes, she is.
Good. Lovely, lovely daughter.
I'm glad.
Okay, so...
Shitty record, you weren't really at the cinema watching
a
movie.
Okay, so we haven't got any emails, but what we have got for you, we've got a competition. And over to my good colleague, Matthew Ravel, for the details.
Oh, sorry, Els. Thanks, Aidan. I'm standing outside the burning building right now. And inside it is Free Software Magazine. So here we are. We have a special deal, competition for you, where you can win a subscription to
Free Software Magazine.
That's not makemagazine.com. Yeah. That's freesoftwaremagazine.com.
That's the Tony Mobley thing, isn't it?
It's not available in shops. So you can only get it here.
Yep.
See, I'm never sure.
You can only get it here.
You know how when they say on adverts, this is not available in the stores. Does that mean it's really, really exclusive and cool?
No.
It mean
it's bollocks.
It's a bit shit.
It means the marketing department failed and they couldn't sell it to anyone.
Yeah. But that's not the case with Free Software Magazine.
No. You can buy that off the website, or you can get a free subscription here, free 12-month subscription. And we were thinking along the lines of, fairly dull questions.
You're not going to
get
it.
And then Jono came up with a good idea of doing an anagram.
An anagram, yes.
Take it away.
Well, the guy behind it, the editor of Free Software Magazine, is Tony Mobley.
It's got to be a made-up name.
His name's actually Tony Mobley.
He's an Australian.
His name's not Tony Mobley IMAP. He sends emails, clearly he's got an IMAP account. So emails arrive from Tony Mobley.
But why add it to your fucking name?
I don't understand why.
I can't remember which account I'm using. Like it matters. So
I think you might be changing that shortly.
jeepers, Bruno, Bruce, I can't remember which one. Yeah.
Yeah, he's Australian. So,
anyway,
Tony Mobley is the kind chap behind Free Software Magazine, and the kind chap who's
the editor-in-chief.
Who's donating it. Now, we thought, let's do something amusing. So you guys have got to think of an anagram, preferably funny and possibly offensive, of Tony Mobley, Free Software Magazine.
Tony Mobley.
Because we thought Tony Mobley was probably too short.
Yeah.
You can't get much out of that, apart from maybe potatoes.
Mobley,
Australians are notably short.
Notably.
Mobley, incidentally, is Mobily.
Yeah.
So, anagram of Tony Mobley, Free Software Magazine.
Yeah.
Not Tony Mobley, IMAP. Tony Mobley, Free Software Magazine. Send us the most offensive anagram you can come up with.
And you can send that to us by SMTP to show@lugradio.org.
Do you think we should get them sent to show@lugradio.org, or do you think we should stick them on the wiki?
Send them to show@lugradio.org.
Yeah.
Send them to show@lugradio.org.
It's the suspense and the surprise.
There is suspenders and a surprise.
Plus, if you filled in a really funny one, someone else might change it to be a shit one, so you didn't win the prize, because they were desperate for the subscription to Free Software Magazine.
They were desperate for our affection.
Fucking so there you go. Yet another quality.
I feel like saying answers on a postcard here.
Answers on a postcard too.
On Swap Shop.
Lug Radio Television Centre.
Wood Lane, room 384.
They could also leave us a voicemail, couldn't they?
On 0870-931-1730.
Well remembered.
0870-931-1730. Don't forget to do it, because look, it's our last episode of season 2 next time.
I'm sorry, just do it once more.
One more time, Matt.
One more time. Can we give
it
a bit of a drum roll?
What's that number again?
C'est 0870931170.
I'll cut that bit out.
Except for the fact that, as I understand it, the French would say that as, you know, 9,310. they don't do it as individual numbers.
So, yes.
0870931130.
Send your voicemail. We want to have loads for the next one. It'd be good to have some celebrity voicemail for the next one.
It would, even if it's just people doing an impression.
Do an impression of a celebrity! Anyone.
Not including Ack.
Yeah.
God Lord.
So, send all your stuff in. We want it to be an interesting last show for this season. It's been a great season, hasn't it? We've met some...
It's been a long season.
It's been a long season.
Well, for some of us anyway, Jonathan.
Thanks very much.
At least we do it, you know. Like, these are the two Sky guys.
thank you for listening, everyone. It's been wonderful being part of what has turned into quite a nice community, really.
Yeah.
It's been rather good, and of course, Lug Radio Live was pretty awesome. Yep.
But let's not forget, this isn't the last one of season two, so we can save all this soppiness to the next one.
Yes, next one. So, keep it real. Bo.
Keep it
get
real.
In touch.
You get me.
Look
in it. The spec.
Look up the website, lads.
Catch you later, guys.
Bye.
Bye.